It's Wednesday, November 5th, 2008, and you're listening to episode 122 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 51 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot, the only gaming podcast that's hosted entirely by post ops. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
I think I'm Pat.
And I'm a moderately intelligent gameologist person.
Worldwide Wing Night 5 coming up here. I'm just going to hit
it. Oh, my God. You know, honestly, I think that this is going to be the most successful worldwide Wing Night. Because honestly, I don't think that there's going to be a huge contingent at St. Louis. I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be respectable.
Wait, if you're there, it's not going to be respectable at all.
No, it's not. It's pretty much going to be Pat and me just drinking ourselves under a table. But I think that worldwide, the reports coming in from our various sources, we've got Wing Nights happening literally all over the world.
Yeah, Chad is 100% right. It's hard to say how successful the St. Louis location is going to be, but the worldwide aspect of this is going to be, I don't know, absolutely unprecedented. If you go, and I'll link this in the show notes, man, we got worldwide Wing Night events going on freaking everywhere.
That's
the list
right.
of cities
and how
is
cool
huge.
Is that?
That is, that's awesome. If you live in a major city, honestly, hit this link up in the show notes, and you will probably be able to hook up with some local booters near you.
Yeah, speaking of which, I got one specifically I said I was going to give a shout-out to, which is Cody and John from the Game On Podcast, which you can find at gameonpodcast.com. They're going to be hosting one in Indianapolis from 7 to 11 p.m. at the Buffalo Wild Wings on the south side of Indianapolis off of 31. So if you're in that area, because we had a lot of people wonder why we're not doing one at Gen Con's home. So there's your answer. We are having one there. It's just we're not going to be there.
Yeah.
So definitely check out these guys' podcasts. And also, if you're in that area, check out the Worldwide Wing Night. And if you're in our area, then as always, we will link the info to ours. So stop by the Cyberies on Dorset and hang with us.
I want to give a report.
To what?
Yes, I want to give a report on something that we talked about in the last episode, but that you cut, Dan.
Okay, what was... Oh, is this about the...
The forum cards.
The forum cards?
Yes.
Well, I want to hold that until an episode where we can get, like, Noble Bear, someone on here, to tell us firsthand about this forum card
game. Want to talk about it. I'm just...
You want to talk about everything.
This whole little segment that you're going into right now, it's going to be cut, too.
Probably.
No,
probably.
I won't cut this.
Yeah, yeah.
No, so, I'll fart and we'll keep it in.
So up, there's Chris. Two forum users on our forums. One is named...
There's more than two.
There's more than two. But in this case, one is named Sandpunk, one is named Noble Bear. And they have started this... It was like this passing idea. Hey, what if we started a CCG based on the forums and based on Fear the Boot? And so they started this card game and people started submitting ideas to it. And it's like exploded. It's this huge thing now where... Dan, I honestly think that Fear the Boot is going to have its own collectible card game by the time Fear the Con rolls around.
And not only has it exploded, I mean, you exploded with card ideas, but then what has made it even, if you want to call it worse, in quotes, is that Noble Bear himself, who has some illustrating skills, goes and draws some of these forum cards.
Oh, yeah, Sir, no justice.
He's very good. And not only is he good, but he's damn quick. I mean, he turns these things around fast, which just blows my mind.
Yes. I know. I want to talk about this game because the amount of detail they've put into this is amazing. I want to talk about this in more detail, maybe in next episode or the episode thereafter. I want to get, like, probably Noble Bear on the episode.
Or Sandpunk.
Or one of them on the episode via Skype to talk about this and tell us what they've got going on.
Are you talking about a Fear the Boot official CCG bonus episode? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I don't know. I was even considering this being a portion of a regular episode.
You're outrageous.
That is craziness.
Pat, did you have something to add? You're shaking your blow pop at me.
No, I'm just shaking my blow pop.
Yeah.
And hey, but what's he doing with the sucker?
Well, I got a comment on the sucker. We're going to get to that in a minute here.
Wow.
I'm actually keeping up on my... I'm actually...
Yes.
Chris, God damn it. I'm actually keeping up on my emails for the past several weeks. I'm only announcing this now.
Holy crap.
For the past several weeks, my email box has not been a black hole of destruction. I've actually been responding to them. But one thing I want to say real quick is...
But each response is like thousands of emails all the way back into last year. It's like, yes, my name is Dan. My hair is wonderful. Yes, my name is Dan. My hair is wonderful. Stock response all the way through.
But if you have a Yahoo email address... Apparently, Yahoo is really, really, really bitchy about mm-hmm. other domains, and I am working to keep our stuff from going into either the spam box or being rejected outright, and I'm having only limited success.
So those if you Nigerian have penis enlargement scams I've been running out of the fearthebootcom
it is causing us a problem.
They're
not scams. They're totally not scams.
They're totally not scams, Chris, and those pills will come 2 to 3 weeks, I guarantee you.
So
hey, I just ripped my third pair of jeans.
If you're writing me from a Yahoo address and you don't see a response, watch your spam folder, because I don't just outright ignore emails. I am responding to them. So if
you are emails.
That's right. If you're not seeing a response, check your spam folder. It's probably in there.
I want to give a shout out to Carla, who is right now tirelessly hitting a mall and buying Fallout 3 for me because I have to podcast.
And Fable 2 for me. And the only reason she's not buying Fallout 3 is because my mom is getting me Fallout 3 for my birthday.
Your mom. So, I tell
you. Hey, when you got your parents buying you Fallout games.
Dan, tell us about your birthday gift that I gave you. Happy birthday, Dan.
Yes.
Okay. Is it Dan's birthday?
Okay. I was going to try to channel Marilyn.
So in a previous episode, we mentioned how my travails trying to get a hold of mm-hmm. a copy of Lord of the Rings.
Did you cut that out or is that it?
No, that's in there.
Okay.
So for my birthday, Chad got me a copy of Lord of the Rings. And by coincidence, mm-hmm. Chris Engler from WAPCAP, it's a great guy, by the way. Definitely check out his show. He also sent me a gift card on Amazon mm-hmm. to use towards a purchase of Lord of the Rings.
Now you're going to use that to buy a Gimp mask, I'm sure.
Well,
something wholesome.
Except they've already, I ordered it about an hour later. Chad brings me this gift. They've already fulfilled the order.
Uh-huh.
So it looks like that copy I'm getting from Amazon is probably going to be a prize on the show or something.
Oh my God, a prize. Yeah. And you know what? We never finished the DM submission thing.
No, we did. I've got that stuff in. That's okay. Probably going to drop shortly after this episode.
All right. We're still going to give out a $25 gift certificate to iTunes for the winner.
Absolutely.
If I better find that.
Yeah, if you still have that. Absolutely.
Somewhere.
All right, let's talk about Pat's blow pop. So we had a debate, and I don't think per se it was a debate on Mike. If it was, it was only between me and Chris, because Chris is the only person that would take a stance so absurd. But I had a debate, I think, with a couple of listeners on why it was that I am a fan of, in a role-playing game, rolling for everything.
Yeah.
Because even an expert upon experts upon experts can fail. And even someone who has no idea what they're doing can't
succeed.
What
the hell are you even talking about?
I was wondering myself. I thought it was just the tequila, but I'm not.
No. For example.
Is that really what you believe?
One of the things that I talked about was, if you have a guy who has dedicated his whole life to astronautics and aerospace engineering,
okay,
and he's going to go sit down and try and design a paper airplane.
Sure.
He should still have to roll for it because there's a chance.
No, because it's just a f***ing... because it's just a paper airplane.
Well, right. See, and I said, I believe they should because there's still a chance they could fail. And I use this as an example.
You know, there's still... I come back to the ninja versus grandmother argument. You're about to have a fight, and ninja versus 98-year-old grandmother with a broom is about to go at it. Is there a chance the ninja could fail and the granny could kill the ninja?
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. Sure. But do you really want to roll for that?
Yeah.
Yes.
You people.
Well, see, and for as an example,
no, ninja chops off granny's head. Continue on with the story.
As an example, I use the whole thing.
A weak example, yes.
With the Mars lander, where they forgot to convert between meters and yards, and they smeared the whole thing across the surface of Mars. But today, right here in my everyday daily life, a real example came up of why rolls ought to be required.
Uh-oh.
Pat had an epic fail with a blow pop. Now, you would not think
this is true.
Something like, you'd say, well, my character's going to unwrap a blow pop and stick it in his damn mouth.
So he unwraps it, and he, like, rips half of the wrapper off.
Yeah.
So the wrapper's off, but only halfway. You can't actually get the rest of it off. Yeah, you can't actually like utilize the blow pop. So he's like, ah, what the hell happened? So he's like trying to get the other half off. He breaks the stick.
In half.
In half.
I've never done that before. The goddamn stick broke in half.
Yeah. Yeah. See, exactly. So if you said to me in a game, my character is going to eat a blow pop, and I tell you to roll for it, this is why.
No.
Because you can critically fail and destroy your blow pop.
Pat's just a drunken idiot. I mean, that's just what happened.
I am.
Wait a second.
We don't know
what Pat's skill level is. I mean, Pat, how often do you have blow pops?
At blow pop eating.
At blow pops, okay, so, I could see you gobbling a lot of blow pops.
I am the grandma with the Desert Eagle in her handbag to your ninja.
Uh-huh. I can see that with you. That's all I'm saying. I can see you definitely handling the blow pop really well.
Yes.
Lots of practice.
Hey, Chad, say blow pop one more time.
I said, if we keep this going, Charm is going to have to start paying us as much money as FASA is. You know, actually, along those lines, speaking of FASA, one of the things that I really like that they did in their role-playing game that I have not seen in any of the role-playing game, not say it doesn't exist, but just I haven't played that game, is they actually had two different dice mechanics that your skills were actually on a scale of 1 to 100. But if you've ever played the FASA Star Trek game, you know that they really nickel and dime your skill, where you get a D10 in this and a D10 in that. And you're like, well, on a scale of 1 to 100, what's the purpose of having like a 5 in transporter operations? But one of the things they did is you roll different dice depending on what you were trying to accomplish. For example, if you were trying to accomplish a site-to-site transport through shields and magnetic interference and insert technical
and special curve. Effects number 5.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That you would have to roll the percentile dice. So someone with a 5 only had a 5% chance of succeeding.
Which means that somebody's going to get smeared across the ether.
Somebody's going to appear inside out.
Yeah.
But if you were attempting an everyday task, then you did not roll percentile dice. You only rolled a 1d10. Huh. So, for example, if on that same...
Oh my God, do you mean they pioneered a version of monostat?
Kind of. But let's say that you are trying to...
Actually, they'd be rolling a d6, but that's okay.
It's like Cro-Magnon monostat.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Let's say that you have a 5 in transporter operations, and you're just trying to beam someone down to a planet surface with no interference, no problem. You roll a d10 against that 5, not percentile dice. And so as a result, everyday tasks were treated radically different than complex or pose tasks. And see, in this case, if Pat was trying to unroll a blow pop and his skill in suckers was like, let's say a 9, he wouldn't have to roll percentile dice, but he would still have to roll that D10. In this case, he rolled a 10 and he failed and made an ass of himself.
He really did.
He critically failed sucker operations.
Which he usually doesn't fail at sucking, but that's a totally different story.
And since he failed at sucker operation, he's been removed from the election commission. Uh-huh. So
it's a good thing.
What are we talking about today?
We're talking about this is it. This is the whole show.
This is the whole show. We're just sucker operations.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Right. Yeah. Actually, it's pretty much blah, blah, blah.
All right.
All right. When Chris is not blah, 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 and we have serious meat on this episode to get down to.
What kind of meat? Are we talking like this is pork, chicken,
it's serious
lean,
meat.
Something?
Well, we just
stupid.
Got back from Mexican, so this is carne asada.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah, I had a carne asada. That's why it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So while we were at dinner,
yes,
one of the things we were talking about was me, Chad, Pat, and Carla, because Chris is dumb and lives in Iowa.
Yes.
We're working on that, though. I'm going to hire a PI to ruin his life, so he has to move down here. But that hasn't happened yet. So while I'm saving up for that, and I should open a donation link on the Fear the Boot site.
PayPal, you know, $1 to ruin Chris's life.
Yes, exactly. Click here if you...
I did get the GIMP costume that you sent me, though.
That's not to ruin your life.
That's just Valentine's Day. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Don't forget to send the pictures.
Or it didn't happen.
That's enhancing my life, not ruining yours.
Mm-hmm.
But while we were at dinner, one of the things we were talking about was Carla was saying that she would be interested in getting in on whatever game we run next, provided she did not have to be there every single week. So,
which is fair enough. I mean, role playing is a pretty serious commitment. That's right. That's a word.
Yeah.
And, you know, we commit to it because, you know, we're voracious role players. We either subscribe to podcasts about role playing, we have role playing tattoos, we have dice. Some of us have a dice roller app on our new iPhones, which are awesome. And
blah blah, bragging.
Yeah. So
wow, I can hear your wanking from here.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So anyway, yeah, for somebody who isn't necessarily a hardcore.
I cannot read this on the air. I'm sorry. Please continue. So I just to explain to all of you what I'm laughing about, I emailed John and basically said
it went away.
Oh, did it? We were at dinner. I'm sorry. This is a complete wild tangent.
Okay,
here.
We're probably going to cut this.
No, we're not.
Why?
No, this is stream of consciousness.
This is fear the friggin' boot. So this is what we're made of.
I sent John a text message, just the one at the bottom, saying, John, next time you're up here, and he's probably going to be up here the week after next. We're going to do a bonus episode about Tom Bombadil.
Yes, because I got to the Tom Bombadil part in Lord of the Rings and well past, I'm halfway through it, actually. And I had this rant about Tom Bombadil and how much, well, I'll save it for the
we'll save it for that.
But Dawn said, you know, I was at a party one time and John was there and I was there. We were both drinking and, you know, everybody else had gone off and we started talking about Lord of the Rings because they are both huge Lord of the Rings fan of the novels and such. And they started having a conversation about Tom Bombadil. And it turns out that, like, John has massive Tom Bombadil opinions, that he is just like a ravenous ex opinion about Tom Bombadil. Right. And so
I just sent him a text message to ask what that opinion was. And he sent me back something I cannot read on the air.
Yes. But so I cannot wait. John gets back.
Is going to be in a couple episodes, but John is going to come up and rejoin us on the show, probably not for next episode, but maybe the episode thereafter, and we'll try to record a couple with him, and probably while I'm in Seattle, I'm going to record some up there with Tex. But anyway, so while we're at dinner, Carla mentions that she's interested in getting in on our next game, but she doesn't know that she can commit to being there every week, which admittedly...
Yeah, you know, role-playing is a huge commitment.
Yeah, I mean,
so
for anyone that is out of school and into the work world, you know what we're talking about. It's real hard to find a day of the week
you can
consistently get a bunch of adults together on.
She wants to see how she can best ruin the entire game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, pretty much.
So we made a joke that actually turned into a serious topic of conversation. I made the joke that because we were talking about a Star Trek game, I don't know if that's what we're going to run next. We've got a couple possibilities, but I made a joke about a Star Trek game where I said, oh, that's no problem. We'll just bring you in as a red shirt that dies in every mission. Yeah. And this actually brought up a serious topic, which is, wouldn't it be neat whether you're a regular player or an irregular player? Because this would be a fun exercise for regular player, but this would also be a great way of handing an irregular player. Because we've talked about in the past that if you have someone that's coming and going, you don't want to work them in the plot too much and be sure they have a character that kind of fades into the background. But what we were talking about is having a character that doesn't fade into the background, that doesn't come and go from episode to episode, but you actually have the person play a different character in every single sitting. So in the case of Star Trek, it might be, in every mission, your character warps out on some unrelated alien ship at the end of the game, or gets killed. And in the middle of the game, at the start of every game, rather, you are handed a brand new character.
My danger lights are going off as you're describing this.
This is not something that you would want to do every time to every player. This is the normal. We play new characters every single game. No, I mean, it's like, especially, I think it really works out well if you're trying to do the classics, like, say, for instance, the classic Star Trek. You know, you there's always that guy who gets killed by the end of the episode. And you have a person who only shows up once a month, if that. Why don't they actually play the guy who gets killed at the end of the episode? No, you don't want to play the guy who gets killed at the beginning of the episode.
Well, let's take some other games, even as examples. Let's say you're playing D&D. You're going to run into that innkeep who might care about the trolls that are threatening his town. But as soon as you resolve that, he's going to go back home to his wife and three kids.
Right.
He's not going to follow the adventuring party to the next town. Yeah. And you could come up with something similar in any game anyone
wants
to list.
The farmer's son who wants to run off to battle and gets killed. And then the, the team has to go off and tell the farmer's parents, like, yes, we defeat the dragon, you're all safe. But your son is dragon poop right now.
Now, and certainly, then, there
you know what's neat, though, is that the person who is coming up with this, what if I were a game master and I was running this, the person who could only show up every once in a while, I would not make characters for them. I would make them make the characters. And I would actually do like plot reveals to them. Because it's a matter of work. It's a matter of commitment. Everybody else can commit to showing up once a week. You can't. That's fine. I understand people are busy. Believe me, I have a kid. I understand people are busy. But the least you can do is come up with a 300-word email describing the character that you're going to play for that month or that session that month.
Right.
And then I'll incorporate it in. And maybe I'll give you a couple. Here's the plot hooks that I'm going to kind of. The guys are going to go up against a dragon. What do you think? You know, what can you work with? I'll play the farmer's son who wants to defeat the dragon for eating the half the village. You know, that sort of thing. And they come up with a character. I would want them to put an equal amount of effort into their, quote, temporary character as the players have done to their permanent characters. See, even if they can't show up
reverse. I would actually, as a GM, want to create their character because I would know here is someone that I need for the session who's just going to tag along.
I disagree with you because I want them to buy into their character more. And if they write the thing for the character, then they're going to buy into that character more.
If you're going to go down that road, which to me really is, I don't know, it kind of goes against my GM grain. But if you're going to go down that road, yeah, you've got to have some buy-in because if player is not going to create any kind of consistency with what they're doing, they're not necessarily going to have, they're not going to have buy-in over the long term. And right. So they're going to come to that session where they're just going to feel like, you know, screwing off and effing around with everybody, everybody at the table doesn't want. So they've got to create some sort of personal investment in the character with maybe a little bit of GM guidance
now, hold
at the time.
Pat, you never talk.
Okay.
Who's right? What's your opinion on this?
Well, I was going to say, I think it depends on the type of character, the type of player that you've got coming in. Like, if you're talking about an experienced player that just happens to be off, like take John, for instance, I mean, you know, he's an experienced role player that he's in law school doing God knows what, you know,
and God knows
things.
Who,
and, but he gets to come back every once in a while. Well, John is certainly somebody that can sit down and in Dan's case, he could take a pre-gen character that Dan worked on and say, here's the character. You've got 10 minutes. Get ready. Go. Sure. And he can do that. Now, on the other hand, if you're talking about somebody like, say, my wife or maybe Carla, I don't have a role player with her. Maybe that's not such the best idea. Maybe it would be better for them to actually sort of come up with their character, which is more along the lines of what you say. So I think you guys are both right.
Pat, you changed my mind.
See
I agree
how diplomatic
with you.
I'm being. Yes. I think it just depends on the character that you're talking about. And I look at this as I think it's great because and everybody's got these situations where in their role playing groups where you've got that guy or that player that has gone off to whatever, you know, to school or, you know, to a job in another city that gets to come back every once in a while, but it's very rarely.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, it's cool to bring him back into the game, but if you've got a real serious campaign going, it's like, he's probably not going to have a main character that's just, he shows up once or twice a year. It's
right.
Yeah. Or maybe they do. And I've done that a little bit, but maybe he doesn't want to do that. Let's just play something fun. And it is also fun. I think from that aspect, like for me,
Pat isn't letting me interrupt him. That's fantastic. High five.
Pat, but he's doing a very good job of balancing on that.
Pat's. I'm not even going to let Chris interrupt me. So just shut the hell up. I like to play, you know, I like the chance to play a character just, you know, all out, you know, balls to the wall. Who cares what happens to him? Because you know what? He's probably going to die at the end. Maybe he doesn't, or maybe he's able to do some epic, cool thing and survive it. But if he doesn't, it's cool. He goes out with a bang. See, that's fun. You've got all that. You have all that that baggage just taken away. So that's fun. I can't wait to do it.
That's fantastic, Pat. We need more of that from you.
See, I think there's some danger if you walk into it knowing that the character is going to die at the end of the session. Or you treat the character as disposable, where maybe they're not supposed to die, but you don't care if they die.
Sure.
Then quickly that person becomes cheese factor. They become cannon fodder.
I think that really depends on the the disposition.
Who
of
are we going to send in?
It's very easy to go down that road.
There might be a trap down this tunnel. Well, let's send in the innkeeper because he's not going to be here
next
game anyway.
Send in the red shirt. Yeah,
precisely. So I think you have to have the disposition from the start that the person who's playing this incidental character is going to take it seriously and is going to play that character seriously, which is why I think you need to reserve this kind of thing for either an experienced role player or an inexperienced role player with a lot of prep talk about, hey, you've got to take this person as if they were a real human being who has a desire to get home to see their wife and kids. They're not going to agree to walk down the tunnel and face the boulder for the sake of the PCs.
That being said, I also think that this character always needs to be named Leroy Jenkins.
Yes, absolutely. Leroy. But, you know, if I could jump back to Dan's side for a moment, I would say that, you know, one way, Dan, if you wanted to have that sort of control and make that, you know, make the characters for them, one way you could actually get that player to buy in is give them some more input and control in the plot. Let them exert that control and that buy-in on the plot itself, you know, saying this is kind of what I'm thinking, and then maybe give that player the option to develop or offer some input on certain smaller sections of the grand plot.
I totally
and then
agree.
Almost making them in a certain way, but not completely, you know, running the show or at least having some more fun with it.
You know, I agree that that's why I was saying it's like, say you're emailing back and forth with this person and then, you know, no matter what, this person has to be into it. This can't be the archetype of the girlfriend who gets dragged along once a month. This has to be somebody, man, I really want to role play. I really want to be part of this. Why can't I be part of this? You know, it has to be that person. And I am totally for giving them some reveals. Say you have this email. We'll use the example of John. Say he's in law school, he can't make it barely even every month. You give him little pieces of the plot. You're just like, you know, this is where I'm going with this. This is what I'm thinking. You know, what is your comeback on it? And you know what? I bet you if you have a person who's pumped, they're going to be like, well, I think that my character can do this and this, and this will be really spectacular if he dies at this part. You know, what do you think about this? You know, I'm looking at your plot and that's really cool, but what, you know, I think that as a GM, if you have that kind of resource, that could be useful if you turn it to your favor to where they can start giving you ideas for plot hooks and stuff.
Yeah, you hit
it's
on
almost
a real,
like having a shift supervisor.
Yeah, you hit on a real thing there because this is something that I've done with
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Pat, because I love when you interrupt us, how many books benefit from you having an idea, you're telling a story, and then an editor or someone comes in and says, hey, that's cool, but what about this? Or, hey, you know, that's kind of stupid, but what about this?
It presumes
you. In a role-playing game, as a GM, you inherently cannot have that.
Well, it presumes you trust the person not to give away your plot or not to make decisions on behalf of the party that involve metagame information. But having said that, I absolutely understand what you're talking about, because as a wannabe author, there have been things I've written where...
I'm going to change your forum title to wannabe author.
That's fine. Where friends have come back and there is a particular character, an aspect of a story they understand better than I do. And so because they might latch on to something that they relate to or they're interested in exploring, that to me was just a footnote of the setting or a footnote of the story.
Now, here's the thing. I don't want to beat this aspect of what we're talking about too much. The character that comes in and dies once a month, because this is the weird. This is the one-off that shouldn't be the norm.
Because the way we've always talked about doing this, and this is why this idea was so fascinating to me, and I'm sure for some people listening, they're like, yeah, no crap, we thought of this 10 years ago. But
so did everybody.
Classical wisdom is that if you have somebody that comes and goes, you give them a character that can come in and out of the plot, but it's a single character.
That's really what we're talking about tonight, not this one-off of dying in the experimental.
In a way, it's not, because what we've always talked about in the past...
You don't have a screwdriver tonight. You cannot contradict me.
No, actually, I don't. I don't know where it is. Oh, yes, I can point the...
I have a bubble blower.
...pan flute music CD at you, which might be equally dangerous. But we've always talked about in the past that if you've got someone who's going to come and go, you give them a character that will be you know, in the plot and out of the plot, the mage who wanders back and forth, or the fighter who's got whatever the case is. But here we're talking about not having one character who comes in and out, but we're instead talking about possibly having one person play a different character, or maybe a repertoire of character, a gallery of characters. There, I mean, there might be some recurrences, but when they come in this week, they're playing the innkeeper. Next week, they're playing the mercenary. The third week, they're playing the wandering sage. Maybe the fourth week, they're back to the innkeeper. But we're talking about, you know, having one person play a different character every sitting based on whatever is going on in the plot. And well, now, once again, as we've said, if they
now the beginning of this discussion was incumbent upon, you know, the person can't come in every single game.
Right.
You know, they can come in once a month if you have a weekly game, or once a year if you have a monthly game or something crazy like that. What you're talking about, though, could be applied to a normal player.
Yes, it could be. Absolutely.
Like you have a guy who comes in every single week, and he's just like somebody like me who can never focus on anything. And you're like, here are five NPCs that I have that, you know, we're playing D&D, but we're not doing the traveling 1,000 miles to chuck a ring in the volcano. We're centering around a castle or a town. And here's a list of all the major NPCs in the town. Every single week, you can play a different one of these if you want, but you can never play the same one multiple weeks.
Or not often. Absolutely. Yeah. And
I mean, keep it loose.
You know, Chris, I want to ask you a question here because I have my insight on this as well.
And we keep interrupting you.
There are reasons why I would not do this for a normal player, at least under normal circumstances. But before I get into those, I want to kind of, you know, pick your brain here because you may already be on to these. You said before that you were against this because this kind of just set off your GM, I don't know, Gaydar or whatever.
Spidey sense?
So,
Gaydar.
What about this worries you?
The biggest thing that really worries me, and we kind of you touched on this, it has to do with the player buy-in. Because one of my biggest worries going into this is that the player's infrequent, so as a human being, as a person around the table, the real investment isn't going to be there. It's not going to be there in the same amounts as the other players around the table. So just as human nature goes, that's going to create a tendency to say, well, you know, I'm going to have a little bit of off-table fun this time. And they start kind of going really, you know, off track with what they're doing, whether it's breaking fourth wall, you know, playing a character completely out of character, or doing something just that doesn't fit or doesn't gel with the campaign. There's that definite worry of boredom that could set in. And then really disrupt it for those who have that consistency. You know, that's a big worry. And I think there is, you know, the level of experience, it does matter. If you have a veteran player and there's good communication between the GM and the player as to really what the GM wants to accomplish, and the player buys into that, then I don't think you have anything to worry about. But it's really hard to do that because I think that core investment's not there, and that's what makes it nervous. And I mean, and I know we talked about, you know, yeah, there's this that could be done and this that could be done, and letting the player do a little bit of development on their own. But again, it's you're letting go of the reins and letting your 13-year-old drive the car. Is that necessarily, you know, I just totally mixed a horse and a car together, but is that really the thing that you want to do?
I'm bringing the players more and more and more into the plot and the creation process.
But you're supposed to be able to do that when they're just sitting around the table anyway.
Well, I would cut the difference and say I agree with Chad, provided I can trust the person to be interested in the story and not the metagame concept of success.
Right.
Quote unquote. I completely agree with what Chris is saying, that you have two big dangers. One is that as he said, the person would not be invested in the character, or the second thing is that the person would not be invested in the plot versus the success of the party. So that's why I'm really hesitant to recommend this as an idea for, hey, here's how you ought to run your game.
Right.
Three guys roll up characters and the fourth guy gets an incidental NPC.
This is like the pass the GM thing.
Right.
This is like some other experiment.
There's a lot of trust there.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think
this is for advanced gamers.
I think it's so dangerous.
Dangerous. Like Like, somebody's going to get a nosebleed if
you whip this
out of the table.
You mess this up, someone's going to die.
Yeah.
Die in the middle of your game.
Right, right. Just like, ah! Like,
yes. No. I'm not talking about a character. A player will keel over dead at the gaming table if you do this wrong.
That just really brings the game down.
Yeah, it does. Unless
I'm going to put that on Wikipedia, and it's going to be on the internet on Wikipedia.
That's fine. As long as you include Oofty Goofty in there somewhere, I will link to it off the show notes.
That's right.
So, but... You know, I think, though, it's a neat idea for a gamer you trust in a special circumstance, such as, I don't know, an unusual plot that needs that kind of thing, mm-hmm. that needs the wandering guy to come in and out of the plot, or as a...
Or if you have
someone
a
who's not
veteran
gonna be there.
Role player and a group that's cool with it that can't... Like well, we always come back to John. John's a veteran role player who's in law school who can't game all the time.
The one
I would
thing
have
I would
no problem doing that with John whatsoever.
Well, say
now,
I would
now if my wife. No, my wife's a veteran player, but like Pat's wife, who's a very normal, non-geeky person necessarily. If we were gaming and I was running the game, and suddenly Pat was like, "Hey, Chad, my wife really wants to play, and she can only play like once a month, and so she wants to do this thing she heard about on this Fear of the Boot." I'd be like, no.
Yeah, see, and that's kind of where I'm at as well. I'd be hesitant with someone like Carla, just because I don't know if she could pick up incidental characters that fast. That if I, like, here's a paragraph.
Not on any detriment to her, but she just doesn't have the breadth of experience.
She just hasn't doing that long.
Veteran gamers do.
Chad, I would trust you because your primary investment's in the story.
And I'm so scattered anyway, so.
Yeah, you wouldn't remember. I trust John because John finds the self-destruction and failure as interesting as a success.
Mm-hmm.
I trust Pat just because Pat's a mature and trustworthy guy. Have no comment on Chris because I've never gamed with him. Mm-hmm. I would not trust someone like...
That'd be awesome.
I would not trust someone like Mike or Tex. Not because they're bad role players or anything like that, but
because they're too
invested in wanting the party to succeed.
And to them, gaming fits within a certain formula. Now, I'm not saying that they're rigid and boring, but they're very rigid and boring.
It's just
they fit gaming into a certain box, and when gaming goes outside of those parameters, it stops being gaming.
Well,
and I think that this thing would, I think that for several people who are listening, I can just imagine right now that there are those people who are driving down the highway listening to this, you know, cussing at their radios like, this isn't gaming. I think that you'll have a lot of that.
Well, and here's, you know what I think you got here, and because I think we've got to look at sort of the impetus of it as well. What we're talking about here is sort of getting together with that guy that you only get together with once every blue moon kind of a thing. And say, especially if it's one of your longstanding players that's just away for, you know, now and only gets to come back every once in a while. Well, you know, it's like, oh, you know, one of our best buds is coming back into town for the weekend. We'd sure love to get together with him, but well, we'd love to see him, but man, we'd also like to game.
Right.
I think you just got to look at this as an opportunity to, you know, you say, well, we're going to play our game, but this session's going to be a little off the wall.
Right.
It's going to be a sort of like a break from the norm, so to speak. It's going to be a little bit more goofy, a little bit more kooky, and go with it. Because what you're doing is you're combining two things. You're getting to see your friend that you don't get to see every so often, and you're still getting to role play.
Sure.
And that's two great things together.
Well,
it's like peanut butter and chocolate.
Peanut and chocolate. Come on. You know, and just to kind of play off that, if you're going to do this as a regular practice, I mean, if you're actually going to engage in this, I would have to strongly recommend that there's got to be those times when that, you know, infrequent player plays somebody who frankly doesn't matter, or even better, is a red herring type of character, because players can smell those kinds of things. And so if they've got this person playing an NPC, every time they show up, they're going to key off that guy because they're automatically going to think that he's important. So, you know, you've got to maintain that sense of danger in the game, basically, and have them play someone who is detrimental to the party and create some of that tension there and remind them that this guy coming in all the time is not necessarily going to be the plot hook that you need to key off of all the time.
I still want to draw this back, though, because this whole example of the guy who dies every game and choosing a new character every game for your one-off dude and stuff, this was supposed to be the one-off, the weird, the alternative way of doing it necessarily, that a lot of people are supposed to look at and go, that's weird. I want to talk about, like, some of the normal mainstream ways of doing it. Like, you have a player who isn't a regular, can only come in once a month, once a year. And stuff.
I think, though, Chris did raise a very good concern about this, which is, and this is not one I had thought about, but which is if the GM uses this one-off NPC, this incidental NPC, who's being taken over by a PC, as too central to the plot, then you can make that guy who comes in every session a bit too important. Mm-hmm. And I think I hadn't brought that up before because I hadn't pictured it that way. I think more the way I was picturing this was, for anyone that's played the Kingdom Hearts games, when you go, the Kingdom Hearts games is a great RPG. It took me forever to pick it up because I just couldn't get past the idea of my party consisting of me, Donald, and Goofy. But once people actually got me over that hump and I tried the games, they're really great games. But for example, you go to these worlds, each of which are themed on a particular Disney movie. So if you go to the Lion King world, Simba becomes a member of your party. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that Simba's the focus of the plot that's unfolding on this world. It just happens to be his stomping grounds. And so as a result, he's got an investment in what's going on, so he joins the party. And when you leave that world, he departs the party. But Chris raises a good concern, which is, well, if you go to the Lion King world and the plot of the game is the Lion King, then all of a sudden Simba's the center of the plot. You know, you're keying off of that one NPC too much. And certainly, if I think you need to watch backing up from that, you need to watch that if a person is abusing this in any metagame sort of way, they're treating the characters too disposable, they're too central to the plot, then at any moment you have to be ready to pull the plug on the idea and say, okay, Bob, you're not going to play the guy that comes and goes anymore, or rather the guys that come and go anymore, but you're going to play one person who just only pops up sometimes. You're going to play the medical officer that only beams down on certain missions, but you still have one character who has no special place in the plot. And if he dies, you're rolling up a new character just like everyone else is, with no special privileges.
Yeah, but I think that you could have a talk with quote unquote Bob if you start seeing that. I mean, you have to look at how much of this is your fault, how much of this is Bob's fault, and kind of come to a middle ground. And you can, I think that you can still make it work. But let's talk about that. Let's talk about the mainstream ways. Like, you have a player who is not a recurring player, who cannot make it every single week. How would you normally get him into the plot? What are some tactics that you would use to get him into the game that isn't going to blow your plot away and isn't going to spend 2 hours of your 4-hour gaming session introducing this guy and why he's with you every single time he shows up?
One is, you gotta have this person have some kind of prior link to the plot.
Right.
For example, this is somebody's brother. This is a guy that the military sent to assist you. It depends on the exact setting, but I would give this person a pre-existing link to the plot and to the party. The second thing that I would advise, in addition to that, you have to write it such that this person does not know more than the player would know. Because one of the most difficult and tedious parts of a game is so-and-so only shows up every third game. So we have to spend the first hour and a half of each game explaining to so-and-so what's going on up to this point. So I think you're almost better off having someone who only needs to know the footnotes, maybe even for plot reasons knows nothing at all, or maybe for plot reasons knows different things than what the party knows. Doesn't know what the party's been doing, but they know a different angle of the plot because they've been off doing something else, which you can discuss with them in email outside of the game because the players had no input on that anyway. So those are some of the things I would consider bringing somebody in and out. Now, typically, I would do that with a single character. Well, you know, as we've been saying, kind of this idea that Carla brought up tonight of doing it with different characters at each session, I think it's a neat idea that introduces a lot of new problems, but also a lot of new possibilities.
Sure. Oh, I agree totally. I think that another thing you can do is you have the, more specifically, you have the NPC that the GM controlled. Like, you have the party, and there's the NPC that is always with the party. And that, you know, whenever the new guy jumps in, or not new guy, but whenever the old guy jumps in, his once a month thing for your weekly game, He just takes over that character and he runs it. Right. Now, I think as a GM, what you have to do is you've been running this character 3 of the 4 weeks for the past year. This guy, because of time and distance and whatever, might have a slightly different interpretation of how this guy runs. My advice as a GM is just kind of let him do it. You know, you've got the whole plot. You've got all these other GMs. Don't, or other NPCs. Don't, you know, hold this one guy so tight. Kind of
don't feel the need to develop him as much. Let, you know, yeah, the player runs him that 1 week, and then maybe as the GM you kind of key off a little bit of what you saw him do, but keep it low key, and don't advance the character development that much. Leave that up to the player. Yeah, he might fade into the background a little bit, but you know, like any good TV show, some characters bubble to the top and then the other ones, you know, fade in the background.
Well, right. And just conversely, I would say don't give the person an NPC that's too important to the plot. Yeah. Because if there's an NPC that you need...
Like the main villain.
Yeah, exactly. If there's an NPC that you need to be in a certain place, doing certain things in a certain way, and how they behave is just super critical to your plot, don't pass it off to a player character, because you cannot and should not control everything they do. Because if you're going to tell them exactly what to do point by point and how to interpret the character... Why don't you just go ahead and play the character for them?
Right.
You know, give them something that, okay, you may have some parameters on that. Here's their personality. Here's their background. Here's their role in the plot. But you're giving this person some freedom to play the character. So if that's dangerous to your plot, it's time to pick a different NPC to let Bob play on his once a month visit.
You know, another type of character that can be fun that I've done at least once in the past is a sort of a one shot appearance is, you can have an NPC character that actually is somewhat working against the party. It's sort of like as in a spy type of a role, mm-hmm. You know, and what you can do beforehand, like you're saying, is you can set this up with the player saying, okay, here's a list of 3 or 4 objectives I want you to try to complete. This is your mission for the game. Get this type, you know, this X, Y, and Z piece of information and try to get it to your contact, this side or the other. And then what
I really like that idea.
Yeah. And then what you've got is you've got, the player, they will kind of be invested in it, and they'll do this and they'll try to get that information over. And then, of course, the danger is they'll get found out by the end of it, in which case, then there you go.
Now,
definitely you don't want to do that. It's like, that wouldn't be every time, but that, like I said, that one time you're working against a party, one time you're working for whatever.
You could even do it long term, too, and say that, you know, long term, these are what your goals are.
Yeah.
And as the campaign goes on, you only come in once a month or so, and you kind of work it in is that you're trying to do this, you're trying to sabotage this, you're trying to get this information, and then also play it out. It's just like, I think email is very important in mm-hmm. this situation. Yeah. And communicate with the guy and say, you know, you don't have to give them huge updates and reports each game you play, but kind of keep them in the loop, so to speak, and, you know, make it to where the character can develop so that they can have that quandary at one point where it's like, okay, I have to betray the group, but do I want to? I'm their comrade so I've decided not to betray them. Do I reveal who I really am? Oh, will they kill me? How much do I actually trust them? But I love them and they're my group, but do
you know,
I trust them? That would be a really cool character to play.
I see a bunch of...
Especially if the other players don't know.
Well, and I see a bunch of side topics here, I think, may get episodes of their own, such as the betrayer PC.
Yeah. And how to actually unwrap a blow pop. And
yeah, precisely how to operate a blow pop.
I'll definitely be listening to that
episode. Pat would have to lead that one.
Yeah.
I have tons of thoughts on that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think we've given a good kind of look at the specific topic we had in mind here.
You know, I have a question for you. You alluded to this, but I got an. I'm very curious. How do you really think Carla would do? Do you think that she can handle this?
Well, wait. Handle what? The
incidental NPC,
new one that dies every week, or
the one character? All depends how Dan's going to approach it and what type of game he's planning on running.
No, I think she would be better. Personally, I think she would be better with a consistent PC that is only there sometimes. Because, and this is just her gaming trait, but one of the things that she struggles with is trying to create and understand the character she's playing. So I think she would be far better with a single character that only appears in some episodes versus many characters that occur in many episodes. But that's just her. And once again, as we say with so many topics, you have to just know the group and the people you're gaming with. But in her case, no, I would never do this. I'd give her the science officer who's only cast for certain shows versus a different red shirt for every mission.
I was going to say, if you do that, she has to wear a red shirt.
And nothing else.
Yeah.
So
that, hey, that's your business, buddy.
All righty. I think we covered a lot of good material in this
one. I think I want to come back to this one. I think there's a lot of ground that we haven't covered.
I don't know if it'll be next episode or not, but right. I definitely see a lot of tangents to this topic that I think we need to pick up in future episodes. So this is definitely giving me some things to think about. Mm-hmm. And probably as I go back and edit the episode, I'll refine some of those thoughts.
And I think I'll completely forget about this in 1 to 2 weeks.
I think you will as well.
I'll completely forget about this in about five minutes.
So for the rest of you guys, thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Later.
Blow pop.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.